Okay, it's good to see everybody. Thank you all for coming in spite of the inclement weather. And we're going to be speaking this evening about the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, as we've been doing through the last few Sundays, whenever we've been speaking on Sunday. We've been giving a summary of a particular chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. But the summary is a little bit different than most people give on the Bhagavad Gita. Our summary is based upon topics. You know, which verses pertain to certain topics. And we do not necessarily go through the whole chapter in consecutive order of the verses. In other words, you may skip around because there may be one verse in the beginning of the chapter talks about a particular subject, and then maybe another verse towards the end or the middle of the chapter that talks about that particular subject. So it's a subject-oriented analysis of each chapter. So chapter two is very, very long. So we're going to try to do it all within half an hour. Oh my God. It's not that hard if you deal with subjects. Okay, let's chant Jai Radha Madhava. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopijana Malabha Kirivardhari. Gopi Janabalabha Kirivardhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yabona Tera Vanachari. I'm gonna Jai Radha. Madhova Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Ballabha Giribadhari. Gopi Jana Ballabha Giribadhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tera Vanachari. Yamuna Yamuna Tera Vana Jagade. Dio Ranum Bad Uva Kunya Vihade. Dio Ranum Bad Uva Kunya Vihade. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Paravidipacharya also Tara Satashi Shimad His Divine Grace Sabaya Chalanad Bhaktivedanta Gosami Marshala Prabhupad Ki Jai Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupad Ki Jai Anantakoti Voishna Vrindigajai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Friends say, Goho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Sivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrindigajai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopa Gopinath Sai Mukunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturidam Kijai Jagadatha Sami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Shrimati Vilasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindigajai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bhav. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shivati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesha Srinivadi. Paschachadejatari. So Omagana Timiranda Shaganjana Shilokaya Chakshur and Militam Yena Tasmai Shigurvena Maha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. As I mentioned, previously, we are going to summarize the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita according to topics. But before we do that, we are going to read from the first verse of the second chapter, which sort of sets the mood. And let's read it. I'll just read it. No repeating, because we have a very short amount of time. Sanjaya Uvacha Tam Tathakrupaya Vishtam Ashru Purnakalekshanam Vishidam Idam Bokyam Upacha Madhusudana. Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion and very sorrowful, his eyes brimming with tears, Madhusudana Krishna spoke the following words. And Prabhupada's commentary is as follows. Material compassion, lamentation, and tears are all signs of ignorance of the real self. Compassion for the eternal soul is real self-realization, is self-realization. The word Madhusudana is significant in this verse. Lord Krishna killed the demon Madhu, and now Arjuna wanted Krishna to kill the demon of misunderstanding that had overtaken him in the discharge of his duty. No one knows where compassion should be applied. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. A man fallen in the ocean of nescience cannot be saved simply by rescuing his outward dress, the gross material body. One who does not know this and laments for the outward dress is called a Shudra, or one who laments unnecessarily. Arjuna was a Kshatriya, and this conduct was not expected from him. Lord Krishna, however, can dissipate the lamentation of the ignorant man, and for this purpose, the Bhagavad Gita was sung by him. This chapter instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul. That's called Sankhya. As explained by the Supreme Authority, Lord Sri Krishna, this realization is made possible by working with the fruit of being. That means we who want something in this world, situated in the fixed conception of the real self. And even though we want something, I got to unpack that. Even though we want something in this world, we're acting fruitively, we should fix the conception of who we really are in our hearts. And then the fruit of intention will dissipate and we will actually achieve bhakti. Okay. So, let's start. So that's the introductory verse for the whole chapter. So, of course, Arjuna is in the middle of the battle. Kurukshetra doesn't know what to do. Because this battle hasn't started. He doesn't know whether to fight or not to fight. He's facing his relatives. And he's feeling sentimental about the whole thing. But the problem is the relatives who he is supposed to fight with are actually inimical and acting in a way that's counterproductive for the welfare of the people in general. So sometimes, under Krishna's direction, it's necessary. Now, we're not talking about religious battles here. It's not that Krishna is encouraging or will encourage Arjuna to fight for a sectarian cause. In other words, Krishna's not saying, Arjuna, because these people are not Hindus, because they're Jewish, you should kill them. That's not what's going on. Krishna is not fighting over sectarian religion. Krishna is fighting to protect people from the exploitation that is being done by the leaders of society at that particular point, and that's particularly the Kurus, who happen to be Arjuna's cousin brothers. Now, they're his cousin brothers, but they're on the opposite side. And to protect people, sometimes one has to forget about the relatives or forget about something that is connected to one's body. And we're going to hear about this in this particular chapter. So, the first thing that happens is Krishna chastises Arjuna before he gets into the philosophical aspects of the second chapter. He says, I'm shocked that you are showing all these impurities. You should know the higher values of life, and what you're talking about is going to lead to what we call infamy. Not fame, but the opposite of fame. And you will not achieve any higher purposes. And then he says to Arjuna, don't give in to this impotence. Impotence. Give up this petty weakness of heart and arise. So this is the introduction here. And at this point, Arjuna presents more of his doubts to Krishna. So this next heading is called Arjuna's Doubts. I'm giving you the headings of each particular subject matter dealt with here. He said, how can I counteract in battle people like Bhishma, who is my grandfather, and others, and these people like my guru, Dronacharya, and they're worshipable. Of course, Dronacharya was Arjuna's martial arts guru. He wasn't like the spiritual guru, but guru can also be taken to mean teacher. So he said, I want to just give this up and go begging. So even though these people are avaricious and mean, and we can't kill them because our spoils will be tainted by blood. So, you know, I don't know what's better, being conquered or conquering. If we killed our enemies, the Kurus, I wouldn't want to live. And then he says to Krishna this famous verse, I'm confused about duty. Where he surrenders to Krishna, I'm weak, I've lost composure. Tell me what is best for me. I am your disciple. Please instruct me. So, shishyaste. I'm your disciple. So, at this point, he accepts Krishna as the authority. However, he still presents some of his doubts. He says, I can't dry up. I find no means to dry up this grief. My senses are just like dry. In other words, you can understand the throat becomes dry sometimes when one is in anxiety like that. I said, even if I win the kingdom, or even if I have a kingdom like the demigods, I'm not interested in fighting. And then he lays down the gauntlet, or bow, and he says, I will not fight. Wow. But remember, he's previously accepted Krishna as the authority, right? So Krishna here starts speaking, as is described in the midst of the armies. This is verse 10 we're at so far, just to give you an idea. And Krishna here speaks another word of chastisement. He says, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. The wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. So Krishna's chastising him again about this. And now Krishna starts to talk about what we call Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya Yoga means, actually the word Sankhya means to count. So Sankhya Yoga means the analytical or the analysis of matter, all the aspects of matter, and even coming up to the soul or super soul, but mainly the aspects of matter like Pancha Mahabhuta, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. Of course, I touched upon the subtle elements too. And then the senses and the objects of the senses, the Mahatattva, etc. There's different analyses of Sankhya. So here Krishna doesn't get into that precise type of analysis. At least in this particular section, he doesn't talk about earth, water, fire, ether, etc. But he talks about the eternality, of the soul. First thing he tells Arjuna, that we've always existed. Never was there a time when we did not exist. Nor will there ever be a time when you or the kings will not exist. And then he says, all right, and also we're changing bodies. And he gives this famous verse, Dehino smin yata dehe, komaram jovajam jara, ta dehanturas propti vidiris tatra namuyati, that the embodied soul is changing from boyhood to youth to old age. We've certainly experienced the last part. And then passes away. And then in the next life, he takes another birth. And a self-realized soul doesn't get bewildered by this. The soul is indestructible. The body is destructible. I'm going through several verses here. Cannot be slain. So these are all aspects of Sankhya Yoga. In other words, the nature of the soul, the nature of the material energy, the body, like this. The self can never be slain. He doesn't experience birth or death. And he gives another famous verse for Samsi Jirnani, etc. Like a person changes clothes. The soul is always changing his bodies. And the soul is not cut by any weapon, burnt by fire, moistened by water, or withered by the wind. So he's just explaining to Arjuna, don't worry, nobody dies. Just the body. You're so concerned about your car, your vehicle. In the 18th chapter, Krishna calls it a yantra, right? Yantra Rudani Maya. That we're all seated on this machine of the material energy. And then further descriptions, the soul is unbreakable, insoluble, not burnt, not dried, everlasting, invisible, inconceivable, immutable, unchangeable. Don't start lamenting for the body. And all souls are not manifest, at least in this world, before they're born. They're manifest in the beginning and then unmanifest at the end, and then they take another body. There's no need of lamentation. And then finally, he says, the soul is eternal. He says this to Arjuna over and over and over again. If you read all these verses about Sankhya Yoga, He's emphasizing the same point. You would think that if you said it once, right, the soul's eternal. Okay, what's the next topic, Krishna? But he's just emphasizing, looking at it in different directions. And then he starts to talk about detachment. Actually, I'm taking some of the verses out of order here, because this is the next subject matter he deals with. And in detachment, he talks about Matra Sparshas Dukantiya. Everybody knows that verse? Sitoshana Sukha Dupadanga Mahapa. You know, it's just Tamsa Tikshish Bharata. Once you learn to tolerate this winter, summer, just like we had a storm recently, it's hard to tolerate. Electricity went off, right? Not for everybody, for us it went off. And you have to tolerate these dualities of the material world. And they all arise from sense perception. I'll give you an example of what I experienced when the power went off. I was in my house and there was no light. And no internet. That's even worse than the light. What am I going to do? And so it affects the consciousness, right? Where there's light, no internet, like that. So it's all due to the perception of the senses. And someone who wants to get liberated has to be steady in happiness and distress, you know, pleasure and pain. And then another reason for detachment is, so if someone's born, they're going to die anyway. And if someone's dead, they're going to be born. So just do your duty. The soul, and again, he talks about the soul is eternal, never slain. Don't grieve for anyone. Just tolerate. Tamsa tiksha shabharata. And then, and not exactly then in order, but the next topic is the nature of reality. This is also part of Sankhya. Krishna states, Nasato vijite bhavo na bhavo vijite satahor ubiyara pidrishto antas tvanias tatvadarshavi, that the sages consider those things that are temporary to be unreal in one sense. You may say it's real, this chair is real. But how long will the chair exist for? Maybe 100 years at most. And like a soap bubble can exist for a few seconds. So 100 years, a few seconds, what's the difference? Or a dream that you have at night, right? Lasts for whatever, 10, 15 minutes if you're lucky. And then you wake up and you want it to continue. Try to go back to sleep. Oh, such a nice dream. I dreamt I was with Krishna. Let me try to sleep again. So 100 years, we have this dream, and then after this dream is over, that's it. Not it for the soul, but that's it for all these different things you did, all the different things you accomplished. Your beautiful body, not so beautiful body, finished. Oh, my God. So that's what Krishna means when he says, of those things which don't continue to exist, you know, really they have no ultimate substantial reality. So what continues to exist? The soul. That's right. And then Krishna talks about duty and connection with Arjuna's position as being a Kshatriya. And so he mentions that the best duty for you is to fight on proper dharmic principles. Don't hesitate. And also, as a Kshatriya, if you get this opportunity, guess what happens? Where do you go? Even if you pass away. Does anyone know? Swarga. Of course, Arjuna is not interested in Swarga. Definitely not interested in Swarga. But Krishna states this, and if you don't fight, even though it's sinful, you're going to lose your reputation. These are all Kshatriya-based arguments. Because a Kshatriya is very interested in reputation. Like a Brahmin is not interested. A Brahmin, all right, someone likes me, someone doesn't like me. That's their problem. I just want to chant Hare Krishna. Sometimes you find even like Lord Rishabhadev in the final portion of his pastimes, he went out and he acted like an avaduta and people were throwing things at him and doing all sorts of nasty things and calling him all sorts of nasty names. And whatever, that's a Brahmin. So you can tell what your varna is very easily. Have someone insult you. And if you just go, all right, whatever. And if you get angry, well, you could either be Kshatriya or Vaishya Shudra. And then if the person gets angry, okay, they're in the three lower varnas, right? What do you do at that point to figure out the other varnas? You offer him some money to do something. Then he's a Vaishya. And if you offer him some money to not do anything, to go to sleep, he's a Shudra. Anyway, that's a different subject matter. So he says that you're going to be criticized. The generals who used to admire you are going to criticize you. Your enemies will make fun of you. You're going to be in a lot of pain, boy. So fight with determination. Just fight. Don't consider happiness and distress, loss or gain, etc., like that. So then Krishna's finished with that particular chapter, and then he goes on to discuss yoga. That's the next subject matter in the second chapter. Yoga, of course, means connection, especially with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It doesn't only mean the yogic exercises, the yam, niyam, you know, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. It means basically how to connect to Krishna. But Krishna here starts to talk about working for him. You know, the first thing he presents is what's called karma yoga. He said you should work without fruitive results. And this way you're going to become free from bondage. And any type of work done for me, or done according to karma yoga, there's no loss or diminution. In other words, it's eternal. It's not an unreal thing like Krishna previously described, right? That things that were temporary, in one sense, unreal, you lose them. But you never lose it, no loss or diminution. And a little advancement in this type of yoga, you never lose it. And it protects you from the most dangerous type of fear, which Srila Prabhupada explains as losing the human form of life in your next life and becoming a cat, or dog, or cockroach, or an amoeba, which is not a good idea. So he says, people in this world are attached to sense gratification. Don't be deterred. Be determined. And don't use all these Vedic excuses like you've been using previously. You know, that if I fight, it's against Dharma. If I fight, I'm going to kill so many men. They're not going to protect the ladies. He said, all these Vedic excuses you've been using previously in the first chapter, these are mainly from the Vedas that deal with what? Three modes of material nature. You should rise above these things, be transcendental, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtraya Gunya Bhavarjana, be free from this duality and know the purpose of the Vedas. He said the purpose of a small pond, he gives this particular metaphor, can be served by the great, by the great reservoir of water. Be steadfast in yoga. Give up this desire for enjoyment of your activities. You're like a miser. If you engage in devotional service, you are going to rid yourself of all reactions. So strive for yoga. And then he says, when your intelligence is out of delusion, you will be indifferent to all that is heard and all that is to be heard, and you should no longer be disturbed by the flowery language of the Vedas, fixed in self-realization, in divine consciousness. This is really interesting how Krishna goes through all these different subject matters. And we're almost finished. Pretty interesting, isn't it? And I pretty much covered, I did cover basically every verse. Then Arjuna poses another question to Krishna. He wants to know, what are the symptoms of someone who is in such consciousness and transcendence? I mean, how can you identify him? How does he speak? How does he act? How does he walk? Krishna answers this, not specifically about talking about walking and stuff like that, but he gives very philosophical answers to this particular question. He says, a man in transcendental consciousness gives up his self-centered sense desires, which come from mental concoction. And also, Krishna doesn't mention it here, but also Karanam Guna Sangasya Sarasad Janma Jonishu, by contact with certain modes of nature. Be satisfied in the self. Don't be disturbed. Again, he's teaching him detachment. Or person in transcendental consciousness, not disturbed by the threefold miseries. This is one of the main topics in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. You know, happiness and distress. He says fear and anger. He's a sage of steady mind. He withdraws his senses from sense objects. Later on, Krishna's going to explain why he does that in this chapter. He withdraws like a tortoise. In other words, it's not that he just like doesn't see, doesn't speak, doesn't hear. Is that hear no evil, speak no evil? Right? So, but if there's something that's counterproductive to his objectives in life, his spiritual objectives, he doesn't meditate on that. Krishna talks about meditation a little later in this particular chapter. And he has to be careful, because until he experiences a higher taste, Krishna says, he may need to restrict himself from sense objects. But if someone simply restricts himself from sense objects, but doesn't have that higher taste, then he's not going to be able to remain in that particular, on that particular level. Because the senses are so strong that they forcibly carry away even a man of discrimination. There's a famous verse, Balavan Indriya Grama Vidvana Ivihikarshati, right? Because if you put someone in touch with a sense object that they're naturally attracted to, then, anyway, we're going to find out about that later. He says, one who fixes his senses and mind on me has steady intelligence, and then he talks about this famous verse, 62, Jayato Visha Pumsam Sangostesha Pajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Jayate. He says, the reason we withdraw the senses like the tortoise from sense objects that can deter us from the spiritual path is that when you contemplate on the sense object that could deter you from the spiritual path, then you contemplate on it, Jayato Vishakpunsa, and you become attached to it, and then you really want it. That's called lust. And then when you get it, or you don't get it, you get what? Angry. And then when you're angry, you get bewilderment of memory, right? You forget about, am I supposed to be chanting? I'm supposed to be a devotee? I'm supposed to be engaged in the spiritual path? Not so important. You become covered up. And then you fall down into the material whirlpool and lost. And actually, Krishna gives this whole, we just mentioned the whole thing. Attachment, lust, anger, delusion, bewilderment of memory, loss of intelligence, and one falls down into the material whirlpool. So you should practice controlling the senses by following the regulated principles of freedom. Because actually, one becomes free. One may think, oh, controlling the senses, not giving in to my impulses, then I'm giving up my freedom. No. You're actually obtaining your freedom because you're not controlled by the senses. Like, you're not controlled by the tongue. You're controlled by, ultimately, Krishna, but you're controlled by your objective, your higher intelligence of knowing what is to be done, what is not to be done, according to your spiritual path. And in that state of mind, Krishna says, the threefold miseries don't exist. And one becomes happy and the intelligence is steady. And without such consciousness, no controlled mind, no controlled senses, no steady intelligence, there's no ultimate happiness. One engaged in spiritual life, Kevalananda Kanda, is always happy. You can tell whether you're Krishna conscious because you're happy. And if you're not happy, guess what? You're not Krishna conscious. So be very careful about focusing on anything that could deter you from the spiritual path, because it's like a boat swept away by the wind. Krishna defines steady intelligence, and we're almost finished with the chapter, by restraining the senses from the objects that deter one from spiritual life. And then he describes the position of the materialists. He says, what materialists or people not interested in spiritual pursuits think is important is thought of as unimportant by the spiritualists. And he gives a metaphor here, which I'm going to speak about in a second, and vice versa. He says, what is night for all beings is awakening for the self-controlled. That's the metaphor, night and day, and vice versa. So one who's engaged in spiritual life should not be disturbed by the flow of desires. In other words, how do you not be disturbed by the flow of desires? Because they'll come. The mind's business is accepting and rejecting things. It'll come. All sorts of thoughts come into your mind. Well, maybe I should jump off the balcony. You know, that may even come to the mind. Right? So crazy things. But why don't you jump off the balcony? Because your intelligence tells you, splat, that you're going to end up severely injured or permanently disabled. But you may have that impulse. Oh, let me try to fly like a bird. Yeah, we have so many impulses. But impulse control means intelligence. Intelligence means, actually, Prabhupada said one time, the form direction of the supersoul. You have some objective. What is your objective? What is your purpose? What is your reason for life? And then you just give up being disturbed by that. And Krishna says that person who is not disturbed, and you expect the mind to come up with these things. It will, until you're a pure devotee. When you're a pure devotee, the mind will reveal the spiritual world, will reveal Vrindavan. And Krishna talks about achieving peace, basically, two more verses. And a person who does this, he says, free of these desires, no sense of proprietorship over anything, no false ego, he attains peace. And the last verse, he says, that is the way of a godly spiritual life in which a man is not bewildered, that even at the time of death, he can enter into the kingdom of God. And that, in a nutshell, in about half an hour, a little more, half an hour, is the whole second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Pretty easy to understand, isn't it? Pretty easy. When you take it down, take it according to the subject matters, and of course, what I've done on this piece of paper, I've actually paraphrased each verse with a number of the verse. So I could, you know, if I had more time, I would say, well, at verse 28, at verse 33, Krishna says this. But It makes it really easy to understand the totality of the chapter. So in this chapter, in other words, basically what's going on is that Krishna chastises Arjuna after Arjuna has actually presented his doubts. Arjuna surrenders. Krishna talks about Sankhya Yoga. This is the main topics here that we've just went over. Krishna talks about detachment because you have the Sankhya Yoga. You have to know why to be detached, right? So Sankhya gives Arjuna the reason to be detached. Krishna talks about the nature of reality. He slips in a little guilt trip to Arjuna about, you know, being a Kshatriya, you know, you're going to get in trouble. People are going to criticize you. Boy, you're going to be considered impotent. For Arjuna, that was really bad because if you read the Mahabharata, at one point he was Brihanala, which means he was impotent. And for a Kshatriya, oh my God, that's probably the worst insult you can give to a Kshatriya. But then he talks about connecting with God, yoga, which Krishna calls yoga. And finally, Krishna talks about what are the qualities of one who does connect with God, or what does one have to do when he connects with God. And mainly, controlling the senses, controlling the impulses, etc. So that's it. Thank you very much. So any questions? Quick question. Yes. What's that? Oh, that's actually a very good question. Because Krishna says, one who, raso varjan raso pyasa param drushtani vartite, one who actually has a higher taste, he becomes fixed in consciousness. This comes from following the process of Krishna consciousness in the association of devotees. Specifically, there's some things not to do, like we have in the yoga system, yam and niyam, some positive things. But the main negative things not to do, is don't break the four regulative principles. No meat for shrags, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. That's pretty easy, isn't it? And then, easy for me. So, and then the positive is basically chanting Krishna's names, which is the most important process, which is the Yuga Dharma. Offering your food to Krishna, associating with the devotees, hearing from advanced devotees. That's the best way to associate with devotees, especially reading Srila Prabhupada's books. One is associating with Prabhupada and serving. In this way, one gets a higher pleasure or a higher taste, and then one's not attracted to these things. Actually, being not attracted doesn't mean that one is repulsed by the things of this world. One is actually nirapeksha, which means neutral. You know, neutral to sand and gold, pebbles and gold, etc., like that. One becomes neutral. Because if you become hateful to things of this world, you're not neutral. Does that make sense? Thank you. That was a good question. Yes, one more question. If you keep meditating on it, yeah. You become angry too, because it doesn't satisfy you. Unless it's a spiritual thing. Let's say you really want to take the deity's remnants, you know. Then you become happy. But if you want something for Krishna's service, you can certainly pray or want something for Krishna's service. But let's say I'm thinking, oh, I would like a Mercedes or whatever. I just read about a man who spent $1 million on a DeLorean car. And then there was this flood in Florida. And then you could see the car. There was pictures of it just floating down the road. And it ended up, when it was dry, it ended up on top of a toilet. Ha, ha, ha. Can you imagine that? Krishna has a sense of humor like anything, isn't it? Of all the places to end up. And it's all finished. So, anyway, so, but you contemplate on something, you just think, I must have it, I have to have it, and then you become attached to it, and then you become extreme, and then you can't get it out of your mind. So the whole idea is to cut that contemplation off at the beginning. Because once you give into it and keep thinking about it, like if, you know, right now if you start thinking about your favorite food, whatever your favorite food is, just meditate on, meditate on, meditating. Then you'll go home and you'll tell your wife, if you have to be married, you have to make this for me tonight. Because you're meditating on it, you're attached to it. And anyway, hopefully she does it. So, I guess it's time to end. We have some other announcements. We pretty much ended timely. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
So thank you, everyone. So let's thank His Holiness Sri Krishna Goswami Maharaj. The second chapter of Bhagavad Gita Maharaj summarized so beautifully, made it simple and section-wise. Maharaj has connected all the verses so nicely. So let's thank Maharaj for the wonderful class. Hari Bol!
Prabhupada Ki Jai. By the mercy of Prabhupada, we can understand the Bhagavad Gita. Because I had read the Bhagavad Gita before I came in touch with Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, and I didn't understand a word of it. Even though it was in English.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. His Holiness Sri Krishna Goswami Maharaj ki jai. Hare Krishna. So, I'll just make a few announcements. Thanks. So, coming up, we have, as I announced this, next Sunday is the most auspicious month of Kartik. Mm. You know, and devotees, throughout the year, we wait for the special month because in this, there is a special potency in any spiritual activity that we do, and you know, special reciprocation from Shri Radha Damodar, Radha Golokananda, and this is the month where we encourage